Okay, here it is. I'm John Williams, and we've got this week's Mincing Rascals. A day late due to a technical glitch. Let's not talk about that. The Rascals start with the Mueller testimony, and then they ask themselves, would Democrats be as fawning over a Democrat version of Donald Trump? And then we read and discuss some of your email. Please do write to John Williams at WGNradio.com. Mayor Lori Lightfoot's clown comment comes up, too. Was she smart to say what she said? Give us a good rating if you think we deserve one, please. And tell your friends to find us. Again, comment as you may. John Williams at WGNradio.com. Today is Thursday. It's July 25th, 2019, and it's 11:13 in the morning. This is John Williams, and we're the Mincing Rascals, the award-winning podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. What's the matter?
Nothing. I'm just
You're shaking your head in dismay.
Not at all.
Podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio in Chicago. Listen for me weekdays from 1 to 3, Steve Bertrand.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the happy-to-be-here host of the Business Lunch.
Were you just cricking your neck? Is that what that was?
I just was playing with Jay a little bit.
Okay.
I like to tease Jay.
We're looking at our intern and sort of exchanging some sort of, boy, I can't wait to get out of here. Look.
I'm Kim Gordon, afternoon anchor at WGN Radio.
I'm Mark Baser. I am from the interview show on WTTW, and we have a podcast, which is also called The Interview Show.
Eric Zorn can't join us today. Scott Stantis has moved to Alabama. He joins us via Skype. Hi, Scott.
Hey, guys. I'm Scott Stantis. I'm still editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and also do the Prickly City podcast. We just posted a new one this week right there on WGN Plus.
Okay, I want to jump into the Mueller stuff, but Scott, how'd the move go?
Well, we're still waiting for our stuff.
That's a problem.
Oh, no. Do you know where it is? It's not lost on a highway or something?
No, you've met Janine. She's one of the nicest people on the planet, and it's a family outfit that did the moving, and she told them, bring it whenever you can.
So are you in an empty house with nothing?
No, the house still had plenty of stuff in it.
Oh, okay.
So we're fine. I'm just like things like T-shirts and pants.
Yeah. Oh, good. So you're doing
so
this
the guy
without
walking nude around Alabama. We know who it is.
I'm so glad you're on Skype today.
We can turn on the video part.
No, let's not. Moves are just so difficult. But you had a fully furnished house you never sold in Alabama. You moved all your you got other stuff at a condo in Chicago, and now you're back down there. Got that? How's the pool?
It's almost turning swimmable. But we came back and the pool pump was out. So it was, as my wife described it, it was a creature from the Black Lagoon green.
Did you watch did they have TV down there? And were you able to watch the Mueller hearing?
I did. And they do, yes. And indoor plumbing too, John. I thought it didn't move any needles. I mean, you look at it afterwards, I thought it was a big, he kept saying, effectively asked America, can you read?
Right. I think that's right. Exactly.
Answer this for me, guys. Who won? Who won the Mueller testimony?
I don't think anybody really won, but I think this country should just be embarrassed by some of the way our congressmen and people acted and the way they talked to Mueller. I thought it was horrible.
Well, I agree with that point that Kim just made. I don't know. I think it depends on what happens next in terms of the Democrats. I don't know exactly what they expected. I think it was pretty easy for everybody to know that he was not going, he was going to be rather tight-lipped.
I'm not going to speak to that.
And that he was going to take the approach he took, Mueller, that is. And so now it comes down to, you have people on the far left, and not just the far left, but the left, saying, well, now is the time to impeach. And I don't think that's going to happen. But if they don't, then it kind of begs the question, what was the point of it all? In other words, the idea was, well, we're going to do these investigations, we're going to get Mueller to talk, we're going to do all these things, and then we'll decide what to do. But if you were waiting for a bombshell yesterday...
I'm not going to speak to that.
You didn't get it.
You didn't get it, and I don't know that... How could you have been expecting it?
Well, I think...
The WikiLeaks mention was probably the closest bombshell there was.
There were two things. First of all, if you watched it real time, it was a yawner, or there was nothing there. The next day, if you watched the important answers given sort of in a loop, there was a lot there. I mean, he did say a lot of things, I think, but it just was painful to go through. I'll tell you who didn't win yesterday was the American people. And I think Robert Mueller owed us a little more full explanation, or an explanation in a different form, taking nothing away from him or the work he's done, or, you know, his current condition or any of that. I think the American people would have been served on both sides. When the Republicans say that this is all about Christopher Steele or this dossier, the American people would have been served by him answering that question, saying that it wasn't, or here's why it is, or what influence that had. That would have, they could have put to bed a lot of the conspiracy theories in that. In the anti-Trump people certainly would have been served by him putting his findings into his own words and explaining them, or talking about the origins of the investigation, things like that. We would, and he, I think he could have done that without compromising his role. And I'm just sorry he didn't do that.
Yeah, the world isn't anxious for Nancy Pelosi or your voice or my voice on this, but the world literally, I think, is anxious for one person's voice on this, the single perfectly placed person to just wax a little bit on what that report said. Actually took a pass.
I wanted him to explain for me what he thought of William Barr's assessment of the report. I think that we're entitled to know that.
Well, there was one part where at least one of the congressmen asked him if you felt, were the president not president, if he's a civilian, could he be criminally prosecuted? And he said yes.
Could you charge the president with a crime after he left office?
Yes.
You believe that he committed, you could charge the president of the United States with obstruction of justice after he left office?
Yes.
I don't think that's what he really was saying.
He backtracked on that later.
What he was saying was that a sitting president could be indicted after leaving office.
That's what I'm trying to say, and I don't know if he was speaking specifically about Donald Trump, this president now, for these things in this report, or in the abstract.
Yeah, well, he was in the abstract because he came back later.
It was Ted Lieu first, and then,
and then Quigley
later in the day.
Okay, yeah. But what am I getting wrong about this?
So people jumped on that saying, oh my God, he just said that Trump did enough to be indicted when he leaves office. And that's not what he said. What he said was a sitting president can't be indicted while in office, but could be indicted after leaving office.
Okay, well, that's the... Okay, so it was in the abstract.
It wasn't about Trump.
Am I correct?
He was talking about it in the abstract.
In the abstract. Well, I wonder what the answer to the question is, though, about this president per se.
Yes.
He could have opined on that. Were you all just disappointed, too, Scott, in how badly Bob Mueller spoke? And never mind that he was only monosyllabic, but that he just, he didn't seem to be with it.
No, he didn't. And that's why I wanted to go back to something that Steve said. You said his condition. And did you mean because he's
an older man
and couldn't get his words out? Or what did you mean by that?
Well, so John said yesterday on his show that he thought that Mueller sounded affected in some way. And I'm not, you didn't say the word addled, but in a way just was having difficulty speaking.
I was disappointed.
And I disagreed with him.
Me too.
I disagreed with him yesterday. I didn't see that. I did later.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
Yeah, I was on the radio listening to it. Actually, I was at a radio station, a friend's radio station here, and I was listening to it instead of watching it. I was listening to it, and he did not project a very powerful presence. He sounded old. He sounded, I'll say it, he sounded addled.
He didn't see in command of the facts, right? I mean, I know he didn't want to answer them, but it didn't sound like he knew them.
And maybe that's why he wanted his assistant there.
Absolutely.
Sitting next to him. I mean, I know some people wanted that and some people didn't, but obviously it was a comforting thing for him. I never really saw him reach over or look to the assistant for information. Did you?
No, I didn't see him do that. A lot of times they'll whisper at hearings into their ear, show him a document.
I never saw that.
It wasn't that. He kept asking them to go back. It was such a lousy exercise. What page are we on? Is this volume one or two? And then they got to the point where they realized he's not going to track in real time as we rapid fire these questions in our 5-minute windows. So they just read him stuff and said, this is what you said. And it was more, Bob Mueller won't say it, but we'll say it. We want the American people to hear these words.
And I think I
don't know how effective that was.
I think it's not effective. Mike Quigley reading the words doesn't matter nearly as much as Bob Mueller reading the words, and Bob Mueller wasn't going to read the words.
But some of the things that were shocking were, you know, when you heard some of the congressmen read the words of the president, of things he had tweeted about WikiLeaks and some things like that, because there's been so many things that happened that you kind of forget.
This just came out, WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks. Donald Trump, October 10th, 2016. This WikiLeaks stuff is unbelievable. You got to read it. Donald Trump, October 12th, 2016. This WikiLeaks is like a treasure trove. Donald Trump, October 31st, 2016. Would any of those quotes disturb you, Mr. Director?
I'm not certain I would say.
How do you react to that?
Well, it's probably problematic is an understatement.
And you're like, wow, he really said that.
And that was Quigley's turn.
Yes.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with that. Like, if you're going to say who won, if that's the game, then maybe the Democrats won in that, hey, we're talking about it right now, so they got another news cycle out of it, and there are very serious things in that report that are that were again brought to the forefront. Now, will we be talking about it next week? No, we'll be on to the next thing.
Boy, I think the Republicans won on this thing. And maybe it's almost beside the point. Better that the American people hear it than we pick a team. But if you were picking a team, I don't see how this hurt the Republicans.
It could have been very damaging for the president, and it wasn't.
I just texted John the opinion section for today's Houston Chronicle.
They've been surprisingly critical of the president. I don't follow Texas politics or Houston Chronicle that closely, but they have had some scathing editorials. And today, big headlines, impeach Trump. As though, you guys, that was what the end game was for this hearing. I didn't want that out of this.
Nancy Pelosi said that was not the end game.
It doesn't have to be. But it's being played as though if you don't have the goods here to impeach, then this whole process of 2 years was time wasted, money wasted. I don't agree with that at all. I think you can do everything that's happened up to yesterday, not impeach the president, and it was a worthwhile exercise.
I don't think so. I don't know where I stand on the impeach the president or not argument, but what is the point of the report came out. The report came out. You could read it. Only 18% people tuned in or something like that yesterday. It wasn't
tuned in. Only 3% read it. 18% watched it?
Or something like that. Okay. I read that stat. Not a lot of people. So, again, I'll repeat what I said. You knew that Mueller was going to do exactly what he did. He told you that. He told you that before.
Yeah,
he said he didn't want to do it. And then he told you beforehand. And then he reads an opening statement telling you he's not going to do it.
You didn't think he was going to have a you can't handle the truth moment when those Republicans kept kneeling
him.
Kneeling. I thought he was going to blow up. I thought he was going to get so pissed off he's going to say, listen.
You snotty little bastard.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're goddamn right I did.
Of course he should be prosecuted. And the funny thing was, they were sometimes misrepresenting his findings, and he sat there and took it.
You know, he was like the 8-year-old being told he has to play with his 3-year-old cousins.
Yeah. And,
so true.
I take your question.
He sat at the table. He endured it. He didn't really participate. He wasn't really fully there. He just did what he had to do, and then he went out for a nice dinner.
Well, if he knew that's how it was going to play out, he should have said no. You'll have to subpoena me before I show up.
It's a very interesting argument by the Republicans that they made at one point was, I forget who did it, but there were a couple of people actually who said, look, if you weren't going to indict the president, why did you do all this?
Why did you look into all this?
Which is such a weird argument from them, as if they wanted the president to be indicted. But it does speak to a certain point, which is, ultimately, Mueller felt like he was somewhat powerless. What was the point? Unless, what Democrats would argue, or some people in the Democratic Party would argue, is that he's handing you everything you need to take it to the next step.
And why wouldn't he say that? That comes to my original beef. He could have said, you're right, I was never going to charge him. I couldn't. I was preparing information should the Congress decide to go forward or not.
And he could have said that, you're
and
right.
And there is enough here for you to go forward, would have been way over the line for him. But in essence, that's the argument. But maybe it was that statement that you're recollecting or one that was similar to it that I'm thinking of, Mark. I take your question, which has been memed today. It's appearing a lot. People are reacting to how, at one point, instead of saying true, or I'll refer to the documents or whatever, he said, I take your question.
What he's doing is not obstructing justice. He is pursuing justice. And the fact that you ran it out 2 years means you perpetuated injustice.
Gentleman's time has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I take your question.
I'm not sure what that means, which is being put forward by some as a great retort, but to me it was a concession.
Do we know if that was a Democrat or Republican?
It was a Republican blistering him.
Were you surprised by that? The amount to which Republicans had no problem blistering him?
No, my takeaway was pretty much the needle didn't move for either side. The Democrats are still leaning towards impeachment. The Republicans are still leaning towards defending the president. So that's where it started and that's where it ended.
I'm just glad it's over.
If a Democrat were president, would Democrats generally be as able and willing to support if a communist Democrat were president and were lying and saying all of the things. I'm just wondering if...
You're saying, would the Democrats behave as badly as the Republicans did?
You understand that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, but aren't you even more disappointed or shocked
in the
Republicans?
See, but I don't think they love the guy, and I think the reason they act that way is they know that the behavior is wrong, but yet they're not doing anything to fix it.
They have learned to love the guy, and more of them are coming around to be Trumpites, and they're running as Trumpites, and it's... A very strange, shocking, and frankly, as someone who's been a conservative and a Republican most of his adult life, it's discouraging as hell because they're not calling him on the race baiting stuff. They're not calling him on when he makes particularly crude comments. They don't
when
call
he lies.
Him on
it. They don't call him on the lies. They defend his lies. Now, would these Democrats be equally supportive? Would Raja Krishnamoorthy, who loves to come on my show, be equally supportive of a Democratic president if he lied all the time? If he was that version of Donald Trump?
All you have to do is look at the Clinton. Look at the Clinton impeachment. Right after the House voted to impeach him, every Democrat in the House took a bus over to the White House to show support.
But I don't know that they're the same animal. I don't know that that's apples and apples.
Of course it's not. I mean, I'm no fan of Clinton, but there's no comparison in terms of...
But it's the closest thing we have, probably.
Yeah.
And Democrats circled the wagons around him.
But they didn't... But the crimes were different. The behavior was different. So I don't think the Democrats have been tested... In the way, no, really,
right,
that the Republicans have.
What if Bill Clinton told 10,000 lies in his first 2 years? Would it be as easy for us? Would we be batting away the criticisms of that? I don't know, but I got to believe the answer is yes. That all of these Republicans that are doing it didn't wake up that day he was elected corrupt, but the process corrupts them. It's human nature.
Or I was listening to another podcast. Where they're interviewing this author, I think his name is Tim Alberta, and he wrote a book that's making waves right now about kind of how the Republican Party got to where it is. He's a reporter for Politico, and he has got a lot of connections within the Republican Party. And one of his takes, which seems right to me, is that these guys, they make $174,000. A lot of them are from small districts, small areas of the country. This is the best job they're going to have, and there is political expediency here. They don't want to lose their jobs, and they go where the prevailing winds are. Now, whether Democrats would or not, I mean, it's politics, so probably yes.
But how do those people face their wives and their kids? They go, hey, kids, daddy stuck up for the president.
They sleep in a nice 100 bed that $174,000.
So that's what they tell themselves.
And they get 20% off at the Trump Hotel.
Do they really?
No. I think the Democrats...
I would believe it.
The Democrats certainly would... move toward the Democratic Trump. They would not be objective. They would move toward him. I just hope they wouldn't move this far.
Well, what makes Democrats so special?
Nothing, but I'm just saying they haven't been tested yet. Maybe they would. I said I hope.
I think this is a great experiment, and the truth is...
Let's not do that experiment.
Let's not do it again.
Let's elect a fascist Democrat or, you know, a communist, and let's see how that goes.
It's not even about ideology.
Yeah,
it's just about...
Exactly.
It's about truthfulness.
It's about character. It's about humanness.
It's about your soul.
Yeah.
The reality, I think, is, and I guess I disagree with Scott on this. My guess is if you were a fly on the wall in rooms where Republicans were speaking, most of them still don't like the man. I mean, yeah. People in office. And I don't know about the general populace, but people in office.
Maybe this is a good point to insert this, and I should do a version of this when Eric Zorn joins us next time, because we tell you, email us, johnwilliams@wgnradio.com, about the podcast, and some of you do. Barbara said, I miss Patty Vasquez. I want you to round out your team. That's taken. We should have females or minorities or people of different religions or political stripes or ages as regularly as we can in this room. Thank you for that, Barbara. Carol says, I found the Mincing Rascals podcast, and I wish you did it every day. Continue to be wonderful and tell Steve Bertrand I've listened to him since he began at WGN, and I love him. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that.
But some of the letters, the email go like
this. You can stop now.
Since I've started listening to you about 3 months ago now, I have to say that for the most part, I enjoy it at times, but I want to reach through the phone and sometimes grab some of you by your throats. Just for once, I would like you to invite a person who has a more conservative point of view or opinion to combat the points of view. I love your podcast. It could be so much more interesting if you'd get a conservative guest to counteract the piling on.
This speaks to the unique time that we are in, because it's not about conservative and progressive or liberal and conservative. It's about Trump or not Trump. The two favorite shows I watch on NBC are hosted by Republicans or former Republicans who detest Donald Trump.
Morning Joe and...
Deadline White House, Nicole Wallace,
okay,
was a communications director for George Bush.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not about conservative or Democrat or Republican. It's about Trump or not Trump.
I guess that's why I'm hesitant to.
Yeah. There are a lot.
I understand.
Stantis is a conservative.
Yeah, he is. But it's funny because the drive time shows at this radio station are hosted by conservatives. But
right.
WGN gets painted with this liberal brush because they don't like the president.
I was thinking of that this week. Just wait till a Democrat wins and all these people listening to Roe and Cochran thinking they're going to get support.
Their guy.
They're going to go back.
I guess my question would be twofold. One would be, does this podcast, and Scott obviously is one, but does it have enough conservatives in the traditional sense of the word conservative? So people
not
that fall into like the George Will camp or
George
like somebody
Bush
like
camp.
Oh, yeah, right. And the other question is, okay, if we are in a Trump versus not Trump, is it all about the man Trump, or have the parameters or have they changed? Is the debate no longer left-right in the way it used to be, in the way that we're still maybe talking about it? Or is everything being realigned?
That's a good point. Answer that question.
Well, I don't know. I mean, one thing that I've heard, which is that there in the suburbs, there's a lot of people who traditionally voted Republican who have moved to the Democratic Party. And one of the reasons why they've done that is based on social issues. But then at the same time, there's a lot of people in rural communities, often less wealthy communities, where people have moved to the Republican Party that traditionally were Democrats.
Because of Donald Trump.
Well, is it because of Trump, or is it because of the things that he picked up on? Is it a mixture of social issues and a mixture of populist economic issues? I mean, I'm not educated or smart enough to know the answer to these. These are things that people are going to be debating for years and years and years. But I think it is interesting. Like, what does it mean to have a smart, principled, conservative person on the
show. But what I'm not interested in, and what we're not going to put on this podcast, as long as I'm sitting here, I don't have to be the decider, but I kind of lead this thing. I'm not going to put a pro-Trump person on just to hear that voice,
right?
Because I don't think it's, I literally don't think it's helpful, right? I have my bias. Maybe I should get a conservative voice in here. I don't even hear them that well anymore because they're talking about Trump.
No, I can't.
Am I wrong to say that?
No, not at all. I think, and you do have, I mean, listen, I came up, and my basic view of political life is simple. Lower taxes, smaller government, the traditional Reagan-esque kind of approach to government. My problem with Trump is probably different than what the rest of the panels is. He's not a conservative. He doesn't view this country as this marvelous, all-embracing monolith that can lift everybody up in the marvel of this country. He doesn't look at, you look at the deficits, look at the tariffs are about as anti-free market as it gets. I mean, that's my contention with this White House, and not to mention, of course, the temperament of this president, which is awful. So that's why you're not hearing me being a Trumpite, because I can't be.
Are a conservative.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's funny because that gets lost.
I've got to tell you, who do I vote for? Who do I vote for in 2020? I'm a Republican.
Who are you going to vote for in 2020? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I've never voted for a Democrat in my life. I mean, on the national level. I never have.
Well, the good news is now you're in Alabama where they don't appear on the ballot.
Well, hold on a second, Scott. You don't have to answer this, but who did you vote for in the last presidential election?
Gary Johnson.
Yeah.
Aleppo.
What would you do if you were elected? About Aleppo.
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria.
But if you were, yeah, no kidding.
One slip of the tongue. I mean,
right.
How many slips of the tongue a day did Trump and Hillary have?
Right.
Okay,
that's
we get hit murdered for Aleppo.
One more email here. Hey, John, I love your show and the Mincing Rascals podcast. Here are my random thoughts. Bring back Kristen McQuarrie and don't lose Scott Stantis. We're trying to accommodate that. I missed the recommendations. Got quite a few tips on books and movies. Could you bring them back? I'm not sure that we will. And, John, here's a topic I've never heard.
I think people like the recommend, even though I don't like them.
We didn't like to do it. It was too much work.
pressure?
I brought it back last week. I didn't know that you got rid of them.
I thought you were doing it. I had to think of mine on my walk here.
I have people who say that they like the recommendations.
Well, let's put it this way. If there's something that you saw, read, or tasted this week that you really want to share with people, by all means do. But if you don't feel it, that was the problem.
There you go, yeah.
We were ginning up recommendations right. When I don't think they were there. So, Kim, Mark, if you've got something you really want to share, we'll get to that.
I recommended the bridges of Madison County.
Where are John?
This year?
And finally, Jack writes to John Williams at WGNRadio.com. Why are there no minimum requirements to become president of the United States? You have to meet certain requirements to practice law, medicine, be a teacher, drive a car. Why do we not require presidential candidates to demonstrate at least a basic understanding of the Constitution and how government works? That'd be pretty cool if they said, pass this hard, a hard Constitution. Right. Test, not like
well, I mean,
one of the three parts
that
of government.
Patty Vasquez had to go before a panel to decide if she was going to run.
This was the vacated seat, so the party chooses.
Oh, got it.
The party was going to
choose. She made her pitch, huh?
But that goes against the very principle of running for office, right?
Right. Yeah. That it should be open to all of us, and we're a democracy with a small
Nobody
D.
Nobody wants to do it now as it is.
I like that a hot mic caught Lori Lightfoot calling a fraternal order of police vice president and FOP clown this week.
It's now back again. This is FOP clown.
She's apologized for it.
Kinda.
It was not appropriate for me to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Well, wait, that's not an apology?
No, I mean, I think in
and
correct
she
me,
kind
Kim,
of repeated it. She said.
She said, right, they said, do you apologize? Are you sorry? And she said, I'm sorry I said it out loud, and then she said, well, is that an apology? And she said, I apologize for saying it out loud.
Yeah.
Okay, so what should she do?
Keep on keeping on.
Keep on going.
Yeah, I like that she's, I'm not going to be trifled
with. And I'm not sure that she leaned over and said that to somebody. I really think she was talking out loud.
I think maybe, yeah, that's my guess.
Well, if that's the case, she should curb that,
yeah.
Because there could be more trouble coming.
I think there are times, though, where people say things out loud, hoping it'll get picked up, and having the cover of wishing that it didn't.
I don't know about that.
I think she's not upset that people heard her say that, is my point.
I think it works for her.
Well, it does, particularly since when she came in, we didn't know what we had here, right? She seems a little retiring, and she served notice. You know, she is not going to be messed with. Her first day, she told Ed Burke, sit down.
Baser's ruminating here. I can see something.
I know, he's
coming.
Really...
What does that mean? Like, what's my face doing?
It's like a,
you're like, oh, John, you're saying so many wrong things.
Well, I'll play the conservative for your listeners. I'm not... I wasn't into it. I don't know. I feel that if we're... you know, if they go low, you go high kind of thing. And I think she was on a hot mic, and she didn't mean to. But I guess I'm not into that level of... discourse. I'm probably on her side politically, but I'm not on.
It's a Trump move.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It's funny how so many things can now be justified by the trickle down of the president.
Right.
Isn't it?
Even everything's okay, and it's not okay.
Yeah, she thought she was just sort of mumbling something to herself or to an aide, and I don't have a problem with it. I think the fact that she passed an ethics package, which actually might do something, is far more remarkable than her. Talking about the FOP representative talking again. I think she's terrific.
It's amazing, isn't it? Not a single alderman voted against that.
The ethics
How
package.
How is that possible? Yeah. How did Ed Burke vote for that?
The ethics package that said that
would keep you from having some certain outside jobs
right,
and things like that.
You can't do both, or not as easily as you used to. Maybe they were hoping everybody else would vote against it, but they felt that politically they needed to vote for it.
I mean, their backs were up against the wall on that one.
I like, too, that they're pushing forward in Chicago, making it more sensible if you don't have a current vehicle sticker, that they're going to find ways to not screw you on that, right? It's a $200 ticket now, one of the highest in the country, if not the highest for a major city. And then it's a $75 ticket if you don't have your parking sticker on, so boom, there's $275. A lot of people don't have that. ProPublica's reported on this extensively. And the mayor is saying, let's find ways for you to make payments. Let's lower the threshold for you to get into that rather than $1,000, maybe $100, maybe less. Maybe a grace period after they notice that your sticker's expired. I think those are all lovely, smart ideas, don't you?
I think it's great. I think, there's all kinds of people living in the city, and I think that everybody should get the chance to live a happy life and be able to have all the opportunities that are open to everyone.
This is not the point you're making, but in my town, you need to get a virtual sticker. There's no sticker that goes on the windshield anymore,
I love that because I hate googling those things off.
No scraping, none of that.
Really, they don't. You don't need scraping anymore. Unless my town is really progressive when it comes to the money they spend on their stickers, but they come up pretty easily now.
Not mine. Yeah, I've got nine stickers. How long people have lived in your town by the number of stickers.
They can't see out the windshield.
Here's the thing about that: the sticker and the reform that she's proposing. It's nurturing to the people she's leading. It's not just a money grab to get to fund government programs. It's more nurturing to the citizens of Chicago.
What do you mean nurturing?
I mean she's looking out for them in a way. She's saying, this has been a money grab on a lot of people who can't afford it. We're not going to get rid of city stickers, but let's make it so that we can collect the money, but not make it punitive so that it's hurting the people who I'm leading.
Let's just go to the premise of the city sticker, because I've lived here now over 14 years, and what's the point?
$264 million a year is the point.
Yeah, I mean, but all you're paying is to help fund the city that you live in. It's not really...
So they'd have to get that money another way, and it's just a way to get the money.
But you could make the same argument about paying the toll. Like, there needs to be upkeep of the roads, there needs to be upkeep of the infrastructure, you need the money. Like, it's not a progressive tax. It's a tax that is everybody pays the same amount, right?
Right.
So it's in that way, it's a regressive tax.
It's not fair that way. That's the loop that some of these people get in, is that once their car gets towed or fined, they can't get the money, and it just keeps piling up.
Right. Well, that's the story. That's what we heard out of the St. Louis suburb, right, where the African American boy was shot, and they talked about how the police department there, Ferguson, thank you, was, these people were in a perpetual cycle of paying fines on the fines, and they built up great resentment in the city.
I'm with you, though, Kim. I'd like to find, if you need $200 per automobile
just
driving,
just add that on to some other bill that
way
I'm
to
getting.
Get it.
Right.
Stop making the busy work for us. You know, when I was talking a moment ago about would Democrats be as vile in my mind as Republicans have been if they had the equivalent of Donald Trump in the White House? An Illinois Republican group has apologized, I'm reading from AP, and removed from its Facebook page a post that showed images of four Democratic congresswomen who have been criticizing the president and referred to themselves as the squad. And on this movie poster, there's the Republicans with the jihad squad. Jihad's a very charged word. Shows them sort of like a Charlie's Angels. But then the Democratic chairman of an Illinois county, this is also from AP, is facing criticism for posting an image on social media comparing the Make America Great Again hats worn by supporters of Donald Trump to Ku Klux Klan hoods. Crane Chicago Business reported the Kankakee Democrats posted the image Friday. The chairman down there told Crane's he posted the image of a MAGA hat resembling a hood. It's been deleted on both parties' pages. He didn't, at least in this reporting, apologize for it. I guess we're all capable of this kind of silly behavior.
It's just so easy with the internet now. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with the Jihad Squad, it looks like it turned out it was an intern who was handling their social media, thought it was funny, and posted it. It's not as nefarious or it was something like that. And, to Kim's point, that's what the internet, that's what happens.
But it's tempting to engage. Well, like, which of those is closer to the truth? Which one is actually making
you better
a
bring
point?
Your conservative person
I
in
know.
There to sit in that
and,
chair.
And shy of having another Scott Stantis here, I'm not going to engage in an argument that's only going to make me look bad. So that wraps up. We're getting the wrap. Do you have recommendations you want to share?
I do have one.
Okay, this
better
be good.
And I told you, this was my bright side on Friday. I did kayaking in the Chicago River. Everybody should play tourist one day and do it. It's amazing. You get just the coolest perspective of the city from being down there, and it's a great workout. And on a beautiful day, there's nothing better.
There's a number of places you can do it. Did you pick it up here?
I did it at Urban Kayaks right at the Columbus Bridge.
A Columbus Bridge, because you can also do that just a little north of Wolf Point. There's a place there. There must be a couple of places. But that was fun. And the water was okay?
The water was fine.
I'm going to swim in it, so trust me.
Well, yeah, I'm not joining you on that. But the water was great. I mean, you don't get that wet.
Yeah. How about you, Mark Baser?
Just the bridges of Madison County.
Hey, Scotty, we want to do a remote from your place sometime there in Alabama, sir.
Oh, come on down, especially like in, let's say, January or February.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
70 degrees here and not there.
Thank you, Mr. Stantis. It's good to hear your voice in Alabama. We'll Skype you in again.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Kim Gordon, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Steve Bertrand just exited stage left. Don't miss Mark Baser's podcast called The Interview Show Podcast. Mark, it's nice of you to come in and join us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.